and welcome to another episode of Inside the Helmet, where we talk with drivers from your favorite series. This week, we're with Rusty Mitchell, who will be driving for Team E, the number 17 car, in the Firestone Freedom 100 on Carburation Day here at Indianapolis. Rusty, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
A lot of us who follow the various feeder series or junior formula series are well acquainted with you, especially those of us who follow Star Mazda. But, of course, your racing career started long before Star Mazda, where you were just killing it in various kart races, starting as far back as, 1996? Tell us how you got into racing, how you got into karts.
Well, you know, pretty much like most people, my dad's always been involved in motorsports. He's gone from having his own drag race car to building engines and setting up chassis, building chassis for late model stock cars. He's worked on IndyCar teams in the mid-90s, or kart teams. Ran a prep shop for different guys. You know, so we've always been involved with it. And when I turned 12 or 13, I don't really remember, maybe it was 13, we got enough money together to go to the kart shop and buy a kart. You know, we just threw it in the back of my dad's work van, and there we went, you know.
Very nice. Well, you know, speaking of all the things that your dad was into, late models and course kart and drag racing, you selected the open wheel route. Why that? What hooked you on open wheel racing versus becoming a drag racer or a dirt racer, going down through that road and maybe into NASCAR?
You know, at the time I started, my dad was still working on a kart team, and it was really, I don't know, you know, you just go back to those mid-90s kart era, and you watch that, and that's, for some reason, I can just remember all the races, going to them, being at them, and that's where you want to be. That was the most competitive series in the world at that time, and, you know, just always wanted to go that route, and it seemed that, you know, with the go-kart, it seemed like a natural progression.
Yeah, well, I think you're right there, and I think that's what people are realizing again with IndyCar, as we try to heal from the past decade and a half of strife, is that the karts really do seem to be the best way to really prepare someone for a career in open wheel racing. But once you have your stint in karts, and you had a great 10 years racing karts, several championships and race wins, eventually you move up. And you, in 2007, you moved into the SCCA Formula Enterprise. There's a lot of various Formula series within the SCCA, Formula Continental and Formula Mazda, such like that. What got you hooked on Formula Enterprise?
Well, what it necessarily came down to was budget. I wanted to go racing. I just graduated from college. You know, I actually put racing, that's why I was in karts so long, I put racing kind of on the back burner. You know, I went to college, had to work before that to make a little money to go to school. but when we got out, that's what, you know, basically my dad was funding it at this point, and that's what we could afford, was basically you could get everything going for, at that time, I think it was 30 grand or something, and run the whole year really cheaply. You know, I had some sponsors with product, you know, fuel, tires, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that was it. That's what got me into it. And then once you get in it, you know, and you're in a formula car and you're racing, and I mean, you just get hooked on any kind of racing, really. But the budget's really what drew us to it.
Now, what makes a Formula Enterprise really kind of neat is everything is sealed in spec. There's very little twiddling you can do with the car. What is it, 170 horsepower sealed Mazda inline four, I believe it is. But in addition to running the open-wheel formula-style car, you can take that same chassis and throw a different body kit on it and go sports car racing, open cockpit, prototype-like Enterprise sports car. Was that something that you ever did? Or did you know people who did both? And was that as feasible and as fruitful as the SCCA was hoping it would be?
I think it's starting to get there as far as, you know, maybe the amount of cars that they have actually sold now that SCCA Enterprises has sold, to where they can be able to do that. But unfortunately, I never was able to do that. You know, it wasn't feasible for us at the time to buy a body kit for it, put a body kit on it, nor did we have the time to put it on and take it off. I mean, it was just my dad and I. And I didn't live here at the time. I didn't live anywhere around him. He kept all the equipment. And I actually lived across the state. You know, in Texas, that can be an 8-hour drive.
Right.
Right.
We never got to put the body kit on it. I knew some people that did. They seemed to like the formula car, the open wheel style, though, better.
Presumably a lot less weight. Mm-hmm. Since you're actually carrying around, well, less body. I mean, let's be honest. And looking at the configurations, body itself can produce some downforce, but the wing configuration looks very, very different between the two. Were you ever able to drive one of the sports car fitted vehicles and compare the downforce levels between the two?
No, unfortunately I wasn't. Like I said, we were so time crunched and budget crunched at that point that we couldn't. I mean, there was really no way I could have pulled that off.
Well, after running a couple of years, doing very well, even partial season, you end up being the runner up, just racing four races in 2008 in the Southwest Division, all four races which you won, I believe. You went there also and did a partial season in Star Mazda. Now, how does that jump come about, going from SCCA Enterprises, partial season in a regional series, jumping up to the Star Mazda Championship? How did that transition happen?
Well, you know, first off, you have to be fortunate enough to find the funding to do it. And, you know, I was able, through business connections, my dad had owned a business, you know, starting back in the early 2000s, and we're able to build a really good business relationship with Motorola. You know, that company's had it for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of able to approach them and say, hey, you know, and also my father's business, Petro Communications, been a huge supporter. And, you know, I wanted to make that jump as a driver. I had ran the regional stuff, the national stuff on the SCCA level, and we'd done really, really well. And, you know, I kind of figured I was 24 years old at the time. It's now or never. You know,
yeah.
Kids 18, 19 years old, they're at, you know, Indy Lights level, even, you know, IndyCar level. So at that point in my life, it was now or never. It needed to be done. And we were fortunate enough to go out and acquire the equipment and the funding to do it. And that jump was the first three or four races. That jump was, it was tough. Needless to say.
Right. Well, you're dealing with a lot more power, for one.
Right.
And I can't imagine that the grip levels would be anywhere near similar to each other. I'm sure that the Star Mazda car has quite a bit more grip. Would you mind talking about some of the dynamic differences between the two racers?
Yeah, sure. You know, the Star Mazda car, you know, it had a lot more power, but it didn't really drive like it had a lot more power. The rotary engine doesn't have the torque of any engine that I've driven. You know, so the Mazda car is really, you know, it's really a momentum-based car, the Star Mazda. And the FE car was more of a point-and-shoot car, kind of like the Lights car is. You just drive it really deep in and then just point it and go again. You know, as to where the Star Mazda car, you could seem to rotate the car a little longer due to the lack of torque. You didn't have to be pointed straight. And I guess the downforce levels are through the bodywork and what's created between the Enterprise car and the Mazda really were different, and the Enterprise car didn't create near as much. So it would wheel spin, maybe even a little bit more than the Star Mazda would. So, you know, it's just a natural progression. Those are the main differences, and the wings on the Star Mazda work a lot better. That's one thing you gotta really get used to is, you know, using the downforce on the Star Mazda as opposed to the FE. You can almost drive it. We even tried it a couple times, taking the wings completely off. You know, you could drive it. So that would be the main thing between the two, the downforce levels, not necessarily the power, but the downforce levels.
Well, now, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but you brought up the Indy Lights chassis. And with the Formula Enterprise car, it sounds like the main thing that you had was mechanical grip.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Star Mazda car, you had to develop a greater feel for aerodynamic grip, as you say, utilizing the wings a bit more. With the Firestone and the Lights car, you do have more power. As you say, there's more of a point-and-shoot type of driving style with it. But what about the aero grip with the Indy Lights chassis?
It has good aero grip. I mean, I'm still figuring it out. Obviously, this is only going to be my second race coming up, but
right.
It has a lot more than I thought it would when I first got in it. The key is obviously is utilizing it.
Right.
You know, it and the Star Mazda, the difference is it's so much heavier of a car, but it will work better at higher speeds than the Mazda would. It was just designed, you know, I guess that way. The wings are bigger, the bodywork's bigger, everything's bigger on it. So,
right.
From what I understand, I'm no engineer by any means, but it just creates so much more downforce than you.
Well, I think that goes back to its original intent, kind of like the current chassis with the Izod IndyCar series, really designed as an oval racer that was then kind of retrofitted to also do the twisty tracks, do the road street courses. In Star Mazda, you did a partial season there in 2008, and you had mentioned that you have two great partners and sponsors, Motorola, your dad's company, Petro Communications, and in 2009, that allowed you to run a full series in the Star Mazda Championship. And before we talk about 2009, I was hoping that you could talk about your two sponsors and this pretty consistent partnership that you've developed with the two. You know, right now, as we were discussing before we started, that getting funding is really, really crucial. More so now than it seems ever before. And young racers coming up think, well, I'm fast in karts, so I should be fast in cars. Give me money to go race. And, you know, it sometimes doesn't work like that. What advice would you give young up-and-coming drivers to things that maybe they should be doing to help enhance their funding, help fuel their racing career, how to develop the business aspect of being a driver?
The best advice I've received and the best advice I could probably give would be to go and meet everybody you can. Talk to everybody you can at the track. Meet everybody's dad, meet their family, meet, you know, because you never know who you're going to run into or talk to, or who knows this guy or that guy. I mean, the racing world is actually, it's smaller than you think it is.
Yeah.
From karts on up to IndyCar to everywhere. It's such a family-based sport as well that there's a lot of people that are related to each other, you know, so just go and meet everybody that you can. And then what you really need to also work on is business-to-business relationships, what you can offer a company that is looking to maybe sponsor somebody, or what markets certain companies are in and how you can promote their product in those markets. You know, these are just things you have to really think about once you get up past go-karts, because the fact of it is, you can, like we were talking about earlier, you can win as many races as you want to. But if you don't have the right backing behind you, it's just so tough. It's not fair, but that's just the way it is.
Right. Well, speaking of winning races, you came really darn close in 2009. You set the pole at Trois-Rivières in Quebec. Track record with that pole effort, if I'm not mistaken. And unfortunately, succumbed to a last lap pass from Alex Ardoin. But in spite of that, you had a fantastic season in 2009. And now in 2011, it looks like the Firestone Indy Lights series will be headlining there at Trois-Rivières. Any chance that we'll see you make a triumphant return?
Yeah, you know, I would like to. And as we were talking about earlier, you know, it just comes down to sponsorship. And if I can find a little bit more, you know, I can hopefully put more races together than the two or three we plan on running. Three Rivers wasn't necessarily in the cards, but I would love to go there. I mean, the event's awesome. I mean, it's a great event, it's a great track, and obviously I've had some success there.
Yeah.
You know, I got passed under yellow in 2009, so.
That's a bitter pill, then. I missed that.
Oh, I've got a really, my girlfriend, as a matter of fact, got me this really good picture of Alex and I, unfortunately, going through the yellow and him going by me.
And,
you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't have done it. I would have done the exact same thing. So I hope to be there. Now, I can't promise that because I really don't know after Indy what we're going to sit down and kind of work out with, you know, potential sponsors and sponsors I currently have.
Well, speaking of Indy, of course, you had a great season in 2010. Especially on some of the ovals. He ended up P4 at what was then O'Reilly Raceway Park, what us old school people remember as Indianapolis Raceway Park, and which we must now call, what is it now, Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis?
I think so.
Well, us old schoolers will continue to think of it as IRP. And coming into Star Mazda, was this some of the first oval racing that you had done?
First pavement oval stuff I had ever done. I actually, while I was in college, I got to race a IMCA modified with a friend of mine that I went to school with, owned one. I mean, he just asked me to come out and drive it one day, just, you know, playing around. And I got to run it, I don't know, 5 or 6 times there, just a local track.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had a little bit of dirt experience before that and something totally different than a way different, but yeah, that's the first pavement experience I'd ever had.
What did you think of that very first experience? Was it something where this feels a little sketchy, I'm not sure I'm into this, or was it something that you took a liking to?
I really enjoyed it. I was fortunate enough to have a really good car. I remember the test day, we went to Milwaukee, the series had a first race was in Milwaukee. We had a test day, and fortunately, I had an engineer that had done lots of oval stuff in F2000 and Star Mazda both. He had previously worked. And, I had a really comfortable car, and so I was able to build up to it. And I think that's the key on an oval. If you're able to build up your speed to it instead of going out there and laying it out all in, you know, 1 hour, and then maybe you crash or maybe you lose confidence, something bad happens. But I really enjoyed it, you know. And Milwaukee is such a fun place to drive. You know, I just really took a liking to it, and fortunately for me, I had success.
Well, you know, I'm really happy that the series, well, the entire open wheel program is headed back to Milwaukee this year, it seems, all the way from USF 2000, USAC Midgets, all the way up to the Indy cars. So, very excited about that. You know, and every driver that we talk to says just Milwaukee is a fantastic place to participate. But of course, not all ovals are the same. You go from the 1 mile flat track, well, relatively flat track at Milwaukee to the 7/8 mile at Iowa. You know, that at Milwaukee and then later in 2010 there at ORP. You know, you're really having to drive the car, work both pedals, or at least lift. But at Iowa, you're pretty much just flat out on that high bank, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, especially in qualifying and practice, you're flat. When you get the heavier fuel load in a race, you know, you can run flat for a little while, but you can't do it the entire time, not in a Mazda. The Mazdas really seem to bounce quite a bit over that bump in 1 and 2 at Iowa.
Yeah, right over the tunnel.
Yeah, I don't know if the lights cars or the Indy cars bounce as much as the Mazda does. But, I had never been on somewhere that fast before. So to me, it was so fast, you know, I really enjoyed it. You know, and anybody that's, you know, a race car driver, they want to go fast.
Right.
You know, you get there and you feel the G-force on you and you feel the compression in the car and the way it reacts with the aero behind another car, you know, you get that aero understeer or anything really. It's I really enjoyed all of it. And yeah, it's two different disciplines for sure to go from Milwaukee to Iowa. Yeah. Milwaukee's so much more of a handling track than Iowa was in the Mazda anyway.
Well, now this year you signed with Team E and raced at Long Beach for the very first time in a Indy Lights car. Mm-hmm. And before coming to Indianapolis, you tested out at Chicagoland. Speaking of a fast track, a lot of us fans, of course, talking as we do about how we think things could be better in the series, a lot of times comes up that, well, there should be an oval race before Indianapolis, so people have new to the series have some experience racing ovals before they come to the speedway. And one that's brought up very often is a place like Chicagoland, a mile and a half D-shaped oval. And well, for you, having taken your Indy Lights test there at Chicagoland, and then not too long after, just about a week after, coming to Indianapolis for the very first practice for the Firestone Freedom 100, is there really anything that you can take from a place like Chicagoland and apply to Indianapolis?
Well, I mean, the speed's one thing; they're relative; they're pretty close. They're two different tracks by a lot. I mean, the banking at Chicago is kind of like comparing Iowa to Milwaukee, you know?
Right.
Indy's so much flatter, and, you know, you can't, there's, yeah, I mean, Indy's so much more of a handling track than Chicago. Mm-hmm. Chicago, you can actually put tires on, new tires, and go slower in the lights. So, Chicago's a place it seemed like, at least that Tuesday we were there, you wanted the least amount of grip you could get, you know, to go quick. And Indy, definitely the other way around. You're gonna want the grip. Tires are gonna wear off. At least at testing, the tires wore off pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your experience driving Indianapolis. This was your first time actually driving a race car around the circuit, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Tell us about that first trip at 190 miles an hour down the front stretch, down the canyon, looking at that wall that is turn one.
Well, you know, you're going down there, and the way the cars are set up, they kind of rotate or roll back to the inside of the track, and so you have to kind of steer back out, and then you turn in to go back into one, and you kind of go uphill into one, and then you go back down in the middle of the corner when the car gets really under compression. And, you're driving down through there and you're just like, wow, really? You know, it took, you know, a good session or two before I, you know, really booked it through there and went flat out the whole time. Just cause, you know, like you said, you're going 190 and I'd never been going that quick before. And, you know, just wanted to build up to it with it being a test day.
Right.
But yeah, and then throughout the day, a little bit after that, when you quit concentrating so hard on what you're doing, you know, you get to look around a little bit and realize just how fortunate you are to be able to do something like that. You know, the 18 of us that were out there, you know, we're so fortunate. You know, there's so many drivers that are as good as we are probably, and, you know, they're not there, you know, due to whatever reasons. How many people would do anything to be in the position we were in? So, yeah, it was an awesome experience.
Now you ended up having a pretty good day, finishing sixth on the timesheets with a 189.183 miles per hour average lap speed for your best lap. That puts you up above some pretty highly thought of racers, including some that are pretty darn good at racing ovals. So that had to feel good to be successful in fine speed right out of the gate. But now you've got this gap until a week from Thursday before you get back on track again. How much are you going to be able to take from that first initial test to the time when you get to return the day before you actually have to go racing?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest thing is just the confidence I have in the team and the car and the confidence they have in me. I mean, like I said, the car was just, I mean, it was awesome. There was no way around it. I think by ourselves, we were probably the quickest. By ourselves car. So, you know, I think you can definitely take a lot. Now, the track's going to be different, especially with the Indy cars running on it all week. It's going to have more rubber. So hopefully it won't wear out the tires as much. You know, I think everybody was having that issue.
Right.
I think there's a lot you can take. I think your setups are going to be pretty close. I mean, at least right off the bat, you know, the setups are going to be good. And the practice sessions are kind of short. They're only 45 minutes, and then you go right into qualifying. So you needed to have a good test, I think, to really be looking good for Indy.
Well, it looks like you and Team E are sitting pretty nice right now. Of course, you always want to be there at the top of the timesheet every single time, but still, first time at the track, this has got to be a good result. And This is right now, as I understand it, this is your last scheduled race as of now. But you're working on more for the rest of the season?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Correct. I think if things keep going the way they're going, funding-wise, I can at least run. I know I want to. I've got some sponsors that want to be in Vegas at the end of the year, which is just another old one knowing run well.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying like Three Rivers. I really want to run Three Rivers in Toronto, and I got some people that want to, you know, maybe put something together from Baltimore. So, you know, there's, I think past Indy, there's going to be another, at least a couple of races. Where, I'm not exactly sure yet, but I think I can definitely run a few more after Indy. And that's the way we're approaching it. You know, we sit down after every race as a, you know, Neil, the guy that owns Team E, and myself, my sponsors, and kind of just sit around and go, all right, well, we want to be here and do this and do that. And that's just kind of the way it's got to go this year. Unfortunately, I don't have a full deal.
Well, now looking forward to 2012 is a, you know, when you got into Star Mazda, you came in as with a partial season effort and then moved into a full season in 2009-2010. Is that what you're looking to do in 2012? Is to do a partial season, develop some connections and some relationships this season, and migrate that into a full season deal in 2012?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the plan ever since I sat down with Neil at Team E, and that was the whole plan. Like, hey, let's put together what we can for this year. Really work on some sponsored funding and some partners, you know, to go in with us, and we can really run a full year next year. And I think if we go run really well at Indy and some of these other tracks, I think we can. It'll just give us more momentum, you know, going into 2012, to where you can really start out well in 2012 with the proper budgets and funding. And I know the team's totally capable. They're awesome. So, you know, that's the plan anyway. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck. Very much looking forward to seeing you at the Speedway a week from Thursday and watching you race on Carburation Day. If you're coming to the Indianapolis area for the 500-mile race, make sure you come at least a day early and come check out the Firestone Indy Lights drivers for the Firestone Freedom 100. Rusty Mitchell, you're going to be driving the number 17 Team E Motorola Petro Communications entry. And hopefully we'll be seeing you start at the front. If not that, then hopefully near the front. But come out. It's a great time. What is it? I think $20 to get in the gate. And you have a full day of racing to watch, including, and I'll tell you, the Firestone Indy Lights races on Carburation Day, some of the most fantastic racing action that I've seen in Indianapolis, and that includes watching the 500-mile race. As much of a spectacle and a great event as the 500 is in terms of pure racing action, man, those Firestone Indy Lights cars, they put on one heck of a show. So make sure you come out and support the future 500 champions there on Carburation Day. Rusty, thank you very, very much for joining us. We greatly appreciate you taking time out and having a chat with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.